Evie.
The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, underwritten in part by Green Mountain Power, CW Print and Design, formerly Copy World, Let's Grow Kids by Concept 2, The Alchemist, UVM Medical Center, as well as over 750 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit.
Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. In recent weeks, the media has been inundated with stories of sexual harassment, rape, and everything in between, particularly sparked by the revelations around Harvey Weinstein, one of the most powerful figures in Hollywood, who it has now been revealed by his victims and survivors has sexually assaulted in various ways countless numbers of actresses in his time as part of the work, a pay-for-play scandals and every variation on that. And if you're on social media, particularly Facebook, it has exploded in the last week with the hashtag MeToo, in which women from all walks of life have been spilling forth stories of pain and hurt and anger around sexual harassment and sexual violence that they've experienced in the course of their life that very often they've never spoken of before. To talk about this, we're going to be joined this half hour by Kathleen Barkley. She is the executive director of HopeWorks in Burlington. HopeWorks is dedicated to ending all forms of sexual violence. They serve the Chittenden County community through providing services and being a leading voice in the state for the change in law and society. They also provide crisis counseling and advocacy for those whose lives have been affected by sexual violence. And we're also joined by Sarah Robinson from the Vermont Network Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. Kathleen and Sarah, thanks for joining us on the Vermont Conversation this week.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for having us on.
Kathleen, I'll start with you. Kathleen's in studio and Sarah is on the phone. This has been an extraordinary few weeks for people and advocates in the areas of sexual violence and sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. What has this been like for you to have this suddenly this bright light shine on an issue that you generally probably work in the shadows on?
Yeah, absolutely. At the same time that it's encouraging to see more people speaking out about sexual violence, it still breaks my heart a little bit. You know, when I went on social media and saw all of my friends and family and just scrolled through post after post that said, me too, it broke my heart. And, you know, we've been doing this work 24/7 since 1973, so for us, we know the reality of sexual violence in Vermont and in Chittenden County in particular, and so this isn't surprising at all, but it still gives me pause, and it breaks my heart a little bit.
You have some data to illustrate the scope of the problem. Share that with us.
Sure. So we serve Chittenden County, Vermont, and last year we served 977 survivors of sexual violence, and I think that number is startling for people. They think that this is a problem that doesn't affect our communities, and it certainly does. And we know that even though we served almost 1,000 people, we know that that's still a drop in the bucket, and there are a lot of survivors who don't reach out for help. So there's still a lot to be done in terms of engaging communities on these issues and making it easier for survivors to come forward and seek help.
I want to just share some of the things on social media to give people a sense of what's going on. So if you just type hashtag MeToo into your Facebook scroll, here's what just came up. I did this a few seconds ago. From Keisha Rahm, who many people know, was the candidate for lieutenant governor and served in the Vermont legislature. Keisha writes, I grew up in my parents' Irish pub with a lot of protective forces around me. I thought I could always stand up for myself and get help no matter what came my way. One night, a drunk man grabbed me by the shoulders and told me to get down on my knees and pick up all the peanut shells off the floor. I was 7. I ran into the women's bathroom, which had just been cleaned with ammonia. It was hard to breathe. I threw up, but I stayed in there for what felt like forever. This was the first time I was ashamed to talk about what happened to me. It was also the first time I recall feeling endangered because of my gender. These moments don't just stay with us. They start to feel like our fault. They're not. We deserve better than this. I'm going to read the next one. This is from Sarah Buxton, also a legislator. She writes, "Me too. I had only been a legislator for about 8 weeks when an important official made 2, maybe 3, obvious, unwanted, and grossly inappropriate grabs in a public setting. A fellow legislator saw it from across the room and stepped over to, quote, discuss something very important with me. With a quick nod, he escorted me out of the event to a safe place. I almost didn't post this because it still burns me out that stuff like this happens. Me too, seriously." It goes on and on and on. Sarah Robinson, what has your reaction been to seeing these accounts and hearing about these all around us in the last week or two?
Yeah, similar to Kathleen, you know, the fact that sexual violence is a widespread problem is something that we know and see every day. And at the same time, the sheer volume of those posts and those stories is also heartening and overwhelming. And I think that one of the things it really illustrates is that although the discussion about Harvey Weinstein really kicked off this current moment and this current discussion, certainly the problem is so much bigger than Harvey Weinstein. I think that all of these posts really speak to the fact that we live in a culture where often these kinds of behaviors are permitted, and there's a spectrum of exploitation and violence that people experience every day.
Let's talk a little bit about that spectrum and how to respond and what the laws are. And since you're in the, you know, direct service work, both of you, what women can practically do to deal with this. Let me turn to you, Kathleen Barkley from HopeWorks. Explain the spectrum of things. What is sexual harassment?
So sexual harassment is any course of conduct, of behavior, of unwanted sexual advances, and that create an environment of fear, a risk to safety, or a sense of a hostility. That's not the technical definition. You know, in our line of work, if somebody is you know, using actions that are causing you to feel unsafe, are using sexual jokes or making sexual advancements without your consent, any of those actions, if you are not consenting to them, we consider them an act of sexual violence. So for us, you know, we see this spectrum is very broad, but we know that the impact to individuals can be devastating no matter where they fall on that spectrum in terms of an act of sexual violence. And what makes sexual harassment, I think, hard is that people who have experienced it are not certain that they can reach out for help, that calling a rape crisis hotline might not seem appropriate because they say, well, you know, they groped me and that was really uncomfortable, but I wasn't raped. So they might not reach out for help. And one of the most important things that I want your listeners to know is that our services are for any and all individuals, men, women, people of all genders, transgender individuals who have experienced any kind of sexual violence along the spectrum, and they don't have to be in a crisis situation to call our hotline for support.
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation. We're talking about sexual harassment and sexual violence with two experts on the subject here in Vermont. If you want to join this conversation, share your own Me Too story. You can call us at 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. Sarah Robinson from the Vermont Network Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. You know, as Kathleen was alluding to, a lot of times people don't think these casual workplace incidents of harassment qualify as sexual violence. What do you say? What's the appropriate way to characterize this?
Yeah, I certainly agree with Kathleen that any unwanted sexual advance, we certainly consider an act of sexual violence. And one of the things that we talk about a lot in communities is that there are really common misconceptions about the sort of people who use sexual violence. And often there are myths or ideas that people that, you know, use physical violence or coercion or verbal violence or harassment are people that we don't know or people that we don't want to think we know. But the reality is that, and I think that the Me Too phenomenon has really brought to the surface the fact that the vast majority of people who experience that kind of victimization, that happens in relationship to somebody that they know. That might be a boss, that might be a coworker, it might be a friend, it might be a family member. And so I think that one of the things that we all have a responsibility to do is to think about ways that we can all interrupt this kind of behavior in our own lives, communities, and families.
You know, just opening the headlines, today's New York Times, three major stories in regards to women speaking up about the routine sexual harassment that they've experienced. Women, one headline, women denounce harassment in California's capital. It was a letter signed by legislators and lobbyists talking about, you know, some of the inappropriate things that were said and done to them. Olympic gymnast Michaela Maroney says she was molested by a team doctor in today's. Another story headlined, military women too should serve unmolested. Does Kathleen, how do you counsel people who are in situations with serial harassers?
Yeah, I think we try to meet them where they're at. So one of the most important things we can do is believe their experience, because as Sarah was alluding to, oftentimes we don't want to believe that the people that are in our lives could do these horrible things. And so oftentimes victims aren't believed, which is why you have a case like Harvey Weinstein or Bill Cosby, where it takes dozens and dozens and dozens of victims' voices coming together before there's any kind of impact. And so one of the most important things is to believe. And then to offer resources and support, and then not judge. So that's going to be really hard for people to realize that you might know someone who's in a really unsafe situation at work. Say, for example, they work at a bar and their manager is sexually harassing them. We see this, unfortunately, in our community. We have a lot of college-aged women that work in our local bars and restaurants. And in that scenario, you know, she might be saying, I need my job and I can't. I cannot. And so we'll talk about ways, okay, we hear that you want to stay in this situation. You don't want to report this. How can you keep yourself safe as much as possible? And where are your places of greater risk? And so we can brainstorm with them solutions in the short term, and then continue to support them. And then eventually they may choose to either leave that job or make a report. And what we see predominantly is people leaving their jobs.
Sarah Robinson, in your experience, what works in your counseling people who are in jobs where, you know, the range of things that they have to tolerate, some verbal, some physical, is really pretty unacceptable in terms of sexual harassment?
Well, as Kathleen alluded to, it, you know, often when folks come forward with a story of sexual harassment or abuse, they are met by sometimes often well-intentioned folks who either have a hard time believing that what a survivor is saying is true, or work within a system that's not able to offer them the sort of supports that survivors need. So at the network, where our focus is really statewide, you know, we work along with organizations like Kathleen's, like Hope Works across the state, to help improve our systems of response. So to make sure that when a survivor of abuse or assault or harassment comes forward and reaches out for help, that our systems are better prepared to assist them with that. They're, it's still far, far from imperfect, and certainly some systems are easier for survivors to navigate, and some are nearly impossible. But our work is really focused on how, as a state, we can best support folks that are having these experiences.
Let me read to you from an op-ed piece in today's Times again by a writer named Lindy West called "Yes, This Is a Witch Hunt. I'm a Witch, and I'm Hunting You." She writes, "In the past 5 years, there has been a positive deluge of victims speaking out, an uncountable number that represents not just the acute trauma of an unwanted touch or a dehumanizing comment, but the invisible ripples of confidence lost, jobs quit, careers stalled, women's influence diminished, men's power entrenched. I keep thinking about what hashtag MeToo would look like if it wasn't a roll call of people who've experienced sexual predation, but a roll call of those who've experienced sexual predation and actually seen their perpetrator brought to justice, whether professionally, legally, or even personally. The number would be minuscule. Facebook's algorithm would bury it." So that's a quote from this op-ed in the New York Times, but it speaks to a very sad reality. We have seen big name, you know, rapists like Bill Cosby and others. Nobody seems to go to jail. And when people talk about Harvey Weinstein, I just keep thinking, well, if experience is any guide, nothing will happen to him.
Yeah.
It's interesting, David, that you bring that up, especially in this moment in Vermont. You know, just look, glancing across the headlines today, we see headlines about former state senator Norm MacAllister, who's avoided jail time as a result of his trial, and you know the ins and outs and details of that trial were very well documented by the media. And I think one of the things that has really shown us is how very difficult these cases are. They're very difficult anytime there is interaction with the criminal legal system. And law enforcement officers will tell you often these are the most difficult cases to investigate. Prosecutors will tell you these are the most difficult cases to prosecute. And Kathleen can speak to victims' experience walking through that system. And so it can be very, very hard for survivors to find some sense of justice, whether that is through the judicial system or another way. But that is something that we're really focused on, is listening to survivors and meeting their needs and finding out what justice would mean for those folks.
Well, Kathleen, what does, and this is Kathleen Barkley, Executive Director of HopeWorks, what does justice look like for people who have been survivors of sexual violence, sexual harassment?
I think it looks different for each individual survivor. For some, it means making a report to law enforcement. It means seeing it all the way through prosecution. But that's a kind of a small percentage of the folks that we serve who have that experience in the system. So it might mean that justice for them is reclaiming their own personal power, going on their healing journey, whatever that looks like for them, reaching out to other survivors, posting something on social media. That might feel like justice. So you know, or it could be if they, you know, are at a university, maybe they make a report to the school, say, for example. But we really encourage the folks that we work with to, yes, access the criminal justice system or the civil justice system if that's something that they want. But knowing that many of the folks that we work with will not choose that path, we try to work with them to empower themselves and find justice in their own lives and the ways that they can.
Sarah Robinson, can you tell us a story where the system worked to help survivors of sexual violence, sexual harassment?
Yes. Well, I think that the thing I would really do is turn to and have your listeners turn to their own Facebook feeds. Because as Kathleen noted, you know, an individual's sense of kind of what justice or what systems response should look like is going to be different for every person. But I think that there are a lot of folks who are through this moment finding their voice on this issue, and finding ways that they can see themselves and their experience in other people. So I think that is probably the most important component of healing for somebody, is really being able to find their own voice and follow their own kind of healing path. But on the other side of things, there are some ways that our state is working diligently to try and improve state-based services that are available to victims of sexual violence. So this year, the legislature passed several bills looking to improve the way that evidence is collected after sexual assaults. So that really helped to improve the process for collecting evidence if someone has been sexually assaulted and seeks medical care, and making sure that that evidence is protected and that there is no rape kit backlog in Vermont. So the legislature has been very focused on that issue, and their investment there has been wonderful. And also, you know, apart from the criminal legal system, we've worked with the Department of Labor to establish a transitional employment program for survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. And we know that in many cases of workplace sexual harassment, or as the result of trauma that's experienced as a result of a sexual assault or domestic violence, that many victims or survivors end up having to leave their employment, and that's a really special set of circumstances that can make, for example, getting a reference for your next job or landing back on your feet really difficult. And so the Department of Labor has a transitional employment program that provides temporary partial wage replacement for survivors of domestic or sexual violence who need to leave work because of the violence and who would otherwise be ineligible for traditional unemployment benefits. So that's another way that our state has really stepped up to recognize the specific needs of domestic and sexual violence survivors.
Going back to this issue of workplace harassment, are there, you know, you've both mentioned how, you know, many women in particular are reluctant to go the legal route, the court's route, and certainly that's understandable given what we see from Norm McAllister to Bill Cosby, how unsatisfying that can be. Are there low-level, you know, kind of official interventions that work other than quitting your job, Kathleen?
I think there can be. I think that there are places in schools and in workplaces that where policies can be used to make a difference. And, you know, I'll just tell my own story very briefly without omit a few details. But I was in a situation many, many years ago where I was experiencing harassment at work, and I made a report. And in that situation, the person who was causing this harm to me, we had a mediated conversation, and he apologized for his behavior, acknowledged the impact, and stopped behaving in that way. For me in that moment, that's really all I needed to have happen. But I didn't feel safe or comfortable addressing it directly with him. So that, you know, I just want to recognize that not everyone would have that same level of support in their workplace. But I was lucky that, you know, I was able to use the supports that were available to me in the workplace and have an outcome that felt satisfactory to me. But that isn't always the case, obviously.
What are you comfortable saying what this person was doing? And
yeah.
It's so helpful for people to recognize themselves in other stories.
Sure. It was verbal. So sort of like aggressively verbal, kind of sexual comments. And then he was making some implications that I was in some kind of a sexual relationship with another staff person, and making a lot of comments about that were untrue, and making things very uncomfortable for me in the work environment.
So you mentioned you did a mediated conversation.
Mm-hmm.
How was that available to you?
So the person that I reported it to, who was my supervisor, I think.
Three levels up.
Yeah, was in charge, you know, drew the short straw, so to speak, so was in charge of these kinds of scenarios. And actually had a really positive conversation with this person, and we kind of envisioned what that conversation could look like. And then we sat down, and the, you know, person who had harmed me talked about, you know, well, first of all, I talked about the impact, and I shared, you know, how I was negatively impacted. And then he didn't justify it or minimize it. He simply apologized, and the behavior stopped. So I'm not sure what other conversations he had with the supervisor, but I can only guess that there were some additional conversations that I weren't a part of.
Okay, Sarah Robinson, we're just about out of time. Could you just share what some resources are that people can turn to here in Vermont to look for, you know, solutions if they're in difficult situations?
Absolutely. So they can visit our website, www.vtnetwork.org, which will connect them with a local program that serves their area in Vermont. And for folks wanting to seek someone to speak with on the phone, they can call the statewide sexual violence hotline, and that number is 1-800-489-7273. And I would just note that, you know, this is a critical moment, and it's also a difficult moment, I think, for a lot of folks that have experienced sexual violence in their lives. To open up your phone or your computer and see your entire Facebook feed filled with folks that are attesting to their own experience being victimized. And that can bring up a lot of stuff for people. So we certainly encourage folks to reach out to their systems of support or reach out to the network or the sexual violence hotline if they want another ear.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Sarah Robinson from the Vermont Network Against Domestic and Sexual Violence and Kathleen Barkley from HopeWorks. I want to thank both of you for joining us this week on the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
That does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. You can hear this and all shows at vermontconversation.com or on our iTunes podcast page. I'm David Goodman. We'll be back next Wednesday at 1 with another Vermont Conversation.
Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility has presented the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, change makers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. The special feature from VBSR is underwritten in part by Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development. The Alchemist, serving the greater Waterbury community and Vermont since 2003. By CW Print and Design, formerly Copy World, your local digital print shop, offering quick design and printing services for projects of all sizes. By Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, and ski erg. Proud to support nonprofit groups such as Local Motion, Vermont's statewide nonprofit advocate for walkable and bikeable communities. By Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers on energy transformation while delivering clean, reliable, and cost-effective power. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. As well as over 750 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit, Learn more at www.vbsr.org.